If you take the first fib, which is called figure 2, all the weightlifters are in the same package, of course, males and females. As I told you, females, they weigh less, males, they weigh more. Of course, females, they lift lighter, and males, they lift heavier. So you will find that young height, even they have like a strong correlation, right? 0.6, something like that. However, when you separate both females and males, you won't find any correlation for the jump height.
All right, Marcos, welcome to Evidence Strong Show for the second time. Great to have you. You're busy young father now, so it's awesome that you have found some time to meet and talk about your new study, and we want to know all about it. But before we go into the study, could you please briefly introduce yourself?
Well, first of all, thank you, Alice, for the invitation. It is always a pleasure to spread the word of weightlifting, you know, and my name is Marcos Soriano. I'm a PhD in Sport Science, and well, I work in Madrid, in Universidad Rey Juan Carlos. I'm also working for the Spanish Weightlifting Federation. I'm in charge of the education part of the Spanish Weightlifting Federation. So the weightlifting national coach, level one, level two, level three, so me. And I also help them with some scientific studies, scientific experiments that we do with our weightlifters, especially to support them in their way to compete. And well, as a lecturer and also as a researcher, I have to do this kind of investigations and to see how these athletes, how they perform in competitions and how prepare them to be better for the competition. That is great because I'm also a passionate about weightlifting and amateur weightlifter too, but I'm really bad at it. That's why I prefer to study instead of, let's say, competing at a high level.
We do what we can for the sport.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Awesome. So let's maybe start with the goal of the study. So what you wanted to find out in the study?
Well, we came up to the question, especially I was discussing this with the Spanish weightlifting national coach, Javier Flores, Dr. Javier Flores, who has also published some papers about the front and back years. So he has experience also in the scientific field. Also, he has spent the last 10 years just, let's say, training weightlifters for, you know, like a national, international tournament. We were discussing that all the data that we find in the scientific literature, they are, let's say, a well-trained amateur sample, we could say that. However, we were guessing how it might change depending on taking the elite or the top population. I mean, like the top weightlifters that we are looking for. So basically, we were just guessing the jump high or the your jumping capabilities usually correlate with weightlifting performance. Okay, maybe in amateur weightlifters, but does it correlate when you are using the top weightlifters? So your front back squat correlates with weightlifting performance. Okay, but maybe with amateur weightlifters. How does it change when you use the top ones? So we took advantage of one training camp that was placed in Madrid before the, it was a preparation camp, a training camp for the World Weightlifting Championship that took place in Riyadh. Well, we took some data about those weightlifters. Especially we took data about the jumps and the maximum dynamic squats, front and back squats, and also the snatch and the clean and jerk, because at those training camps, as they usually take part like 2 weeks before the competition, they usually do kind of a mock competition. So they try to reach their best, also for the coaches to know how those weightlifters are prepared for the competition. And they usually take the squats, the heavy squats too. And we also implemented the jumps testing with a force plate. And then what we did later was just to find some correlations and to play with some correlations and to see if what we found in the scientific literature could be also found in those weightlifters. So the first of all, what we found is that the jump height, but this usually correlated with weightlifting performance, as you can see in other world results, especially when you separate females from males. So you find no correlations because the jump height is usually a measure that is biased to the lighter weightlifter. It means that if you are a heavy weightlifter, and you are weighing 100 kgs, you will probably jump less than a lighter weight lift. And let's say it might hidden your true potential. So as we had the opportunity to test the jumps, not only, you know, like jump mats or infrared mats or whatever, we had the opportunity to test with force plates.
Mm-hmm.
We could also assess, you know, the propulsive net impulse and the force that were applied to the jump properly, right?
Do you have to explain what propulsive net impulse is?
Well, basically, when you assess jump height and you are, for example, using a jump mat, so what you are truly assessing is the time that the lifter is in contact with the jump mat and the time that the weightlifter is on the flight. Let's say the flight time or that is in the air, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when the lifter again contacts the mat. So of course, just applying some mathematical equations is really easy to get the jump height, although it is not the gold standard method to do so, but well, you can get very good at least estimations of the jump height. However, when you use a force plate, you can assess the forces that the lifter is applying on the force plate by the time that the lifter is applying that force. That is called mechanical impulse. And if you apply, let's say, classic physics, you know, like classic mechanics, like the impulse momentum relationship establishes that the velocity at the takeoff, so when the, let's say, when the lifter just takes off from the ground, takes off from the force plate, that will be equal to the impulse that had been applied previously. So if you have the impulse, you will know the velocity at takeoff, and then you will know the jump height, independently of how the weightlifter then lands or whatever. So that's why this is the gold standard. And then if you can measure how this weightlifter applies the impulse, maybe we could know if some weightlifters, for example, they apply more impulse than others, but they are heavier than others. Maybe just taking the propulsive net impulse, which is the force that you apply, the net force that you apply once the, let's say, the force, the ground reaction forces of your body weight are removed, then we could truly know what weightlifters are able to generate more force than others, right? I don't know if I explain myself properly.
Let's check. So what I'm hearing is that propulsive impulse is force times time it's applied. And when we think, yes, about lifter taking off for the jump, we take away the weight of the body, because the weight, each weightlifter will have different body weight. And we just look at the forces after the body weight is subtracted, the force times time without the body weight. And that's the...
That is. And that actually allows you to know the true potential of the force generation capacity that your weightlifter has. Because the problem when you use jump high, as I said before, is that if the weightlifter is heavier, of course, he can apply, let's say, a higher total impulse. However, if he is heavier, the jump high will be lower. On the other side, or the contrary, so a lighter weightlifter, so he will be able to apply force. And then for sure, if he only weighs, let's say, 55 kg, it will be easier for him, you know, like to jump higher. So that's why sometimes the jump high is not a good indicator of performance, especially in weightlifters, in top weightlifters. And that was really nice to know that, because after that, we know, at least in the Spanish Weightlifting Federation, and I know in many other places they do the same, that the jump high itself is not a good indicator. I'm not saying that, for example, if you go to a school for a talent identification, or something like that, you can use jump height. Of course, you can use jump height because, well, it can give you some insight of how these young people, they apply force and also how powerful they are. But also you must take into account that if you see, for example, one guy that is a little bit heavier than the others and he jumps lower, you can't say maybe he cannot do weightlifting or he won't be a good weightlifter. So you must take that into account. And well, of course, in weightlifting, so you can take as many people as they can, because we are not, you know, like a massive sport. So we must take whatever they can, and also that they enjoy this sport. But in terms of talent identification, it gives us, you know, like a good idea of that. Also, it is good to know for monitoring, because, you know, weightlifters, they usually change their body mass, especially for competitions. So maybe the weightlifter that you are training, he was jumping 40 centimeters. Then just before competition, he is jumping 44 centimeters. And then you say, wow, now we are on point. Maybe you didn't increase your neuromuscular performance. The point is that maybe you have lost in the last 2 weeks 6 kilos. And then you go to a competition. Of course, you are lighter. You take a jump. Then you jump 4 centimeters higher. Then you say, wow, we are on point. But we are maybe not on point, because if you didn't do like a proper reduction of your body weight, maybe your neuromuscular performance is worse. And if we take the propulsive net impulse instead of the jump high, we can see if your propulsive net impulse is better or is worse, and if the monitoring is better. Now, of course, it wasn't as it was a cross-sectional study, it was not the aim to know that. We would have to prove that, how your propulsive net impulse changes as your profile performance changes too, right? That would be a longitudinal study to perform on our weightlifters and to prove what I'm saying now. But it is just like an hypothesis that might be true, especially just applying like the knowledge that we have now, and also like some logical concepts. But it was good at that point. Also, we wanted to know how important is your maximum strength, because sometimes I listen to some weightlifting coaches and they think that it is not necessary to be so strong, because as long as you control your technique, like there is kind of a threshold where you don't be too need, or you don't need to be as strong as you could be, and maybe just saying X percent of your snatch, your clean and jerk, so you don't need to squat more.
Could we go through the tests? So what front squat, back squat, what jump did you do? Counter movement jump and...
Yep. I mean, we tested the front squat and the back squat, 1 repetition maximum. Mm-hmm. I think that all of the listeners, they will know what those tests are, right? And those are like exercise commonly implemented in weightlifting. But we also employ like the counter movement jump, which is, you know, like the most extended jump that is performing sports science, but also the deep squat jump. We are performing this jump from a while ago. It is also called rocket jump, but it is basically like the squat jump from the lowest position, the deepest position of the squat.
Did they jump as high as possible? What was the cue?
Yeah, of course, they jumped as high and as fast as possible.
Okay.
So same cues during the counter movement jump and during the deep squat jump. What was surprising to us, when you perform the counter movement jump and the deep squat jump, like let's say regular sports, they don't jump in the deep squat jump as high as they jump in the counter movement jump, right? However, when you test weightlifters, what I found is that there is no significant difference between the counter movement jump and the deep squat jump. Why? I think it is because they know very well to apply force from the deepest position, you know?
Marcos, I want to grab a side question. Do you think it is a possibility that in the future you, Christoph, and maybe Sham combine the run the same protocol with weightlifters, national elite in each nation, weightlifters, and test them on the same protocol and try to pull the data together and publish that?
That could be a really nice idea, actually. So that could be really good.
Maybe German Weightlifting Federation would join in too. They are countries that are publishing a lot at the moment, and you guys know each other pretty well by now, at least from reading each other's work. So that could be something to prepare.
Yeah. Actually, so I think that's a really good idea, and we should do that, especially to add knowledge. It's a traditional sport, historical sport, and there are many studies about that, yes. And we know many things about this, yes. But still, we need to know a little bit more. And maybe if we add our forces, if we are able to work aligned to the same goal, maybe we get, of course, better results.
For sure.
Well, talking about the maximum strength, as I was saying, like, we also found that the front squad and also the back squad, they were really, really good correlated, very strong correlations, almost nearly perfect correlations were found for the snatch and the clean and jerk, which, well, it is something that we knew in terms of that the maximum strength of your lower body is very important. And I think it can be hypothesized that that is why, you know, like weightlifting coaches all around the world, they keep the back squat and the front squat even the competition week, like 4 or 5 days before the competition, they are still squatting.
Yeah.
So if you follow, you know, like the traditional periodization, they say that you should start with this kind of exercises, you know, like more general, blah, 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 and then you should just the final or the week previous to the competition, just do your the most specific exercise, right? Just fulfilling the principle of specificity, right? However, in weightlifting, so these kind of results show you that the back and front squats are exercises that are gonna be with you for your whole life and probably for all the weeks that you train in weightlifting. Actually, if you do weightlifting, I think it's because you like to squat, if not... I mean, it makes no sense that you do weightlifting at all. But I think that those results were really, really, let's say, resourceful in terms of explaining some of the things that the weightlifting coaches are doing for a long time. Because we didn't find anything like so novel, apart from that about the jump height that we had, you know, like our hypothesis about that. But apart from that, all the things that we just did was just support the knowledge that we already had. But now we have a paper with an elite population, top weightlifters, just saying, look, this is what we found. And of course, if we can get like more sample size, it will be even better.
All right. So let's go through the correlations and all the variables you measured, because I think it's brilliant, the figure two you have with. So deep squat, what you measured, then kata movement, jump, and then the squats, what variables did you measure and how strong the correlations were. So we have a full picture of what matters in Olympic weightlifters.
Well, as you can see in the scientific study, well, we have this picture of the two jumps, especially for the first time race. And well, I invite to everybody that is listening to us now that they have a look at the paper, because I think it's quite insightful in terms of how weightlifters perform. And well, anyone that has used a force plate, they might know that they give you a lot of metrics, like plenty of metrics. And sometimes you get into it and it's like a forest, so you don't know where to go, right? And I try to keep it as simple as possible, because of course there are like some advanced techniques, statistical techniques as principal component analysis and all this stuff. But I try, or we try to do this article, let's say, as practical as possible. So maybe the principal component analysis is something really good for researchers, and they might know what they mean. But if I tell to a weightlifting coach what a principal component analysis is, he would say, I don't know what you are talking about, right? Then we stick to the basics and we try to keep it as simple as possible. So what do weightlifting coaches can understand? Okay, power, it is something that they can understand. Net impulse, it is something that they can understand. Jump height, and of course, its relative, let's say, value with the maximum back squat, like divided by your body mass and whichever, right? So what we found is that especially the propulsive net impulse, as I said, and the peak power in some points was strongly correlated with performance. And as I said, the jump height was not correlated at all. But look at this, it was something interesting. For example, if you take the first figure, which is called figure two, all the weightlifters are in the same package, of course, males and females. As I told you, females, they weigh less, males, they weigh more. Of course, females, they lift less or they lift lighter, and males, they lift heavier. So you will find that young high, even they have like good strong correlation, right? 0.6, something like that. However, when you separate both females and males, you won't find any correlation for the jump high, which is what I told before, that it is very important to assess elite weightlifter or top weightlifters separate from the amateur weightlifters. But also when you are evaluating there, you should also take into account like the sex factor, especially the sex factor. So just dividing like females and males and probably the weight category. And I think that if you were able to perform a study just taking into account both factors, you would have, you know, like a truthful measure of weightlifting or how their neuromuscular capacities correlate with weightlifting performance. Because we must not forget that it was something just to corroborate, to confirm the associations between the neuromuscular capacities of those weightlifters with weightlifting performance. Because after all, they have to lift. So maybe you can have the best potential in the world neuromuscularly. However, if you don't lift or if you don't touch the snatch properly, so it has nothing to do with that. But well, of course, at that level, all of them, they perform well. They are really good lifters. And it is important to have, you know, like this test to control and to monitor their training too. I've told you like many times, especially with one of those papers that we had in your webpage, like that about the relationship between upper and lower maximal, you know, strength with the split gear and everything. So people sometimes just they get the formula, they just apply. For some of them, the formula will apply, but for some of them, it won't apply. This is the same. I mean, like correlation does not mean causation. So we need to be aware that this correlation or this information tells us that, of course, the neuromuscular capabilities of weightlifters are really important for their performance. It has been performed in a top level population, which I think, to my knowledge, it is the best, the first study to do that, because the other study that we had, they were not truly elite weightlifters. And we need to pay attention to increasing the maximal strength levels of the lower body. And we need to pay attention to increasing the force generation capacity during a ballistic or a, let's say, fast dynamic task, as it is a jump, right? To improve our weightlifting performance. Does it mean that if I increase 10 kg my back squat, automatically I will increase my snatch or my clean and jerk? Not necessarily. What I say is, if you increase by 10 kg your back squat, probably you will have more potential to increase your snatch and clean and jerk performance, for sure. However, correlation does not mean causation. And it is something that we need to be critical. So we know that from a physical standpoint, it is important to increase both capabilities, like how we apply force on a fast dynamic task and on a maximum dynamic task. But of course, they are weightlifters. They need to refine the technique. So they can be as strong as they want. But if they don't have a refined technique, I mean, like the barbell won't go where it has to go, and probably they won't complete the lift. So they need to be, let's say, the interpretation of the study should be correct in those terms. And I would like to make it as clear as possible, especially for the people to, well, we are not trying to sell any product. It is just a matter of helping also coaches to say, and also to look at our reference data, because it is a small sample size, of course, six males and seven females. But of course, you can see how much a female or a male of these characteristics, elite weightlifters, how much they jump. You can compare with your weightlifters. Also, you can see how much they squat. You can compare with yours. And I think it is a way of also, I don't know, like giving feedback to all of us and retroalimenting to all of us with data from different countries. I think it is something that needs to happen for this sport to keep advancing.
So let's say the coaches increase the squat by 10 kilos and now they have an athlete stronger at 10 kilos. Squat is a different exercise though to snatch or clean. It is slower, more controlled, less dynamic, and more strength, less power. Do we agree until now?
Yeah,
so
we do agree.
There will be a time in between needed to convert now this new strength into power production or impulse production, or it could happen immediately.
As I said, I mean, it's about the periodization that they have, but just, you know, like following a traditional periodization that they use in weightlifting, of course, with the difference between the different schools, right? But of course, if they increase by 10 kg, the back squat, it means that the weightlifter is able to generate more force. And it is always good. It is always good that you increase your force generating capacity. And especially with the back squat and also the front squat that are exercises that are so close to dynamic correspondence of weightlifting, it is true that it is the exercise is more controlled or slower, but because the load is heavier. But the weightlifter during the whole range of motion, they try to be as fast as possible. And that should be the goal of that squat, right? So, of course, what I'm saying is that it doesn't mean that if you just increase 10 kg, necessarily you are gonna lift more in your clean and jerk or snatch. However, if you increase your back squat by 10 kg, you will have more potential to do that. So, if your goal during your accumulation phase or whatever you want to call it was to be stronger, okay, you have got it, you're doing perfect. Now, although in the accumulation phase you have also worked on snatch, clean and jerk, derivatives of those exercises, just keeping progress, now you will have probably a more, let's say, maximum strength oriented period with higher loads, less volume, and also with more technically specific exercise applied to it. And probably you will have now the potential, all right, to transform like all the strength potential that you have, all your neuromuscular capacities to increase your kg. But for that, you need to refine your technique and you need to know or you need to adapt to your strength level or your force generating capacity now. So you need to be efficient and also effective as you apply force. And it is something that is needed in weightlifting. So it's not a cause-effect relationship. Not always when you increase your strength levels, you will increase your marks. I mean, that is the art of training, right? So you need to train to increase the potential of your lifter, but also you need to train to increase like the technical mastery. It is something really difficult, also is marvelous, is beautiful. That's why training with lifters is beautiful.
That's true. Okay, did you say everything you wanted to say? Do we have more tips for coaches how to apply the research we said, the correlations? You have some data available for comparison?
Yeah, I think we said everything that we wanted to say, especially I would like them to be as critical as possible with any study that they read, not only mine, but also other studies in terms of, does it apply to my sample size? So can I use this kind of data? And well, for our data, not only for correlations, but if they look at we have one table within the manuscript, is table one, when we put all the data with confidence intervals and also the range, the minimum and maximum of the different metrics, and also like the marks, the performance of the clean and jerk, snatch, back squat, from our weightlifters. So maybe a good tip would be to just compare the data that we have with the data that they have, and just to see, you know, if it corroborates, if it confirms, if it supports their theories. Because at the end of the day, they are working on a specific population like maybe 3, 4, or 6 weightlifters at most, especially in an elite level. So they are more interested in, you know, sample size equals 1 instead of, you know, like a generalizable results. And it is always important to keep in mind that we should do research for, let's say, the academic institutions or the research institution, but also for the coaches. It is really important to do science for the coaches and also like this kind of programs or, you know, like your job trying to connect different weightlifting coaches and also researchers, also this knowledge trying to apply to different fields, because I mean, it's the way of advancing. So if not, at least I don't know in other countries, but in Spain, traditionally, it has been the academy goes one way, the practice goes the opposite way. And actually, they shock heads all the time. Now, I'm really happy that I can work in the Spanish Weightlifting Federation. And of course, I'm learning a lot from coaches that they don't have a PhD. So they have not studied weightlifting the way as I studied. They have not published any scientific paper, but they have seen like people snatching and clean and jerking like for maybe 20 years or 30 years. So they have the eye more trained than I will ever be, you know? And I mean, it is very important that you also learn from them because they have many things to teach you. Of course, with our scientific approach, with the scientific method, maybe we can take all that knowledge and maybe to structure it in also, you know, resources that they also need to advance their practice and to improve their practice. So what I think is that we should be more humble one side and also the other side and trying to work together to improve our performance and weightlifting as a sport.
You know what I think? I think that researchers and coaches are very similar because I have a suspicion that good coaches are running experiments. They just have sample one, but they are having an idea and then testing it and then applying what they learned into the next cycle or the next athlete. So they are running mini experiments, and that's where the researchers can come in and kind of bring the collection of data on more than one athlete and then the power of analyzing it and getting the conclusions out for more than one person. So because of that, faster. So giving coaches the answers to the questions faster because they can gather data in a research, using research methods and using equipment and so on, technology. And so I see a huge power in this collaboration between coaches and researchers, especially that strength sports seem to be evident way to improve the health of the whole population. So that's the way to go for sure. Okay, two last questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift?
My favorite lift is the jerk.
Is it?
And it's because my doctoral thesis was on that. And actually, is the exercise that I hate the most and the exercise that I need the most. So I have a love-hate with it because I did a doctoral thesis on the jerk, but I couldn't improve my jerk as much as I wanted.
All right, and the last question is where people can find you if they want to follow your research or contact you with the study opportunity, where they should find you online.
Yeah. I will let you know my new email because, as I told you now, it changed, especially the institutional one, and also by Instagram. So if you tag me whenever you just put me this. So I will be now very active, especially with the World Championship we are hosting here in Spain. I usually post like the research that we have and everything. So I don't do a specific post with some information of this, but yes. And by ResearchGate, if anyone needs any paper, for example, this one, even though it is open access, so if they ask me that for, from ResearchGate, I can also share it with them. So that's not a problem. So for me, I'm always happy to collaborate with weightlifting coaches.
Thank you so much, Marcos. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Alex. It was a pleasure for me too.